Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's Here and Now. He's been called the patron saint of backpackers, a travel legend who drove a $100 car from London to Kabul in 1972 and then sold it for a $5 profit. British-born Tony Wheeler parlayed that adventure into the Lonely Planet travel guidebooks, where the motto is, "We'll tell it like it is without fear or favor." Favor, of course, spelled with a British U. Tony Wheeler just back from traveling in Pakistan. In fact, he was there during those protests over the anti-Muslim video. And he's here in Boston to celebrate a new youth hostel where he's staying during this visit, even though he's worth millions. And he joins us in the studio. Tony, welcome.
Hello.
Now, you've done quite well with these travel guides. You stay at the hostels when you travel?
Look, there's some places in the world, I often say, where you can have all the money in the world and you're still going to be spending $5 a night, because the best hotel in town is $5 a night. But actually, the hostel here in Boston is really good.
Yes, LEED certified. They've been telling us all about it.
Yeah, it's all mod cons.
Well, so how did this start for you?
Well, my wife and I did in 1972, so a long time ago now, buy an old car, and we drove it all the way to Afghanistan. And we had a great time. We enjoyed ourselves all the way, and we sold the car in Kabul, and we carried on and eventually ended up in Australia. And we thought, somebody should write a book about this.
Well, traveling to Pakistan, Afghanistan in 1972 is one thing. Traveling there now is another. Make the case. You just were in Pakistan during those protests.
I was, yeah. And I must admit, the day I crossed the border, I just walked across the border from India into Pakistan. And I'd been reading in the papers that day about all the trouble that was going on. And while I was there, the trouble was going on. And we'd come into some little town and go into a hotel, and everybody in the hotel would be crowded around the television watching a riot in Karachi or in Islamabad. You know, and it's death to Americans. And they'd turn around and see us and say, "Oh, welcome. Come in. Sit down. Have a cup of tea." I think very often, you know, what the reality is on the ground and what you see on the media, two different things.
You know, you're known for giving the real depiction of a country in general. You know, you blog about an official beer in Pakistan, a Muslim country. You find huge patches of marijuana on the roadside.
Yeah, the marijuana was in the Hunza, which is up in the mountains. And yeah, they supposedly, once upon a time, they were saying if you ate apricots all the time, you'd live to be 100 years old. I got to say, I saw as many many marijuana plantations growing as apricots.
Well, speak to the thinking, the perception that it is sort of, you know, the drug-addled guidebook to the world, you know?
No, it's not. I mean, we do guidebooks to everywhere these days. So if you're on business in Tokyo, we'd have a guidebook on Tokyo. If you're holidaying with the family in Paris, or if you're driving around New England.
Well, what might you say about New England that we might not see in the other road, the Michelin Guide?
Really, with those sort of guidebooks, if you're covering a first world destination that everybody else is covering as well, part of what you try and do is just not recommend the same places. You look at the competition and think, okay, they recommend restaurant ABC, we'll cover XYZ.
Right. But continue to make the case for going to these dangerous places. I'm thinking, you know, you're a seasoned hand at this point. Your itinerary just for this year defines peripatetic. It included Pakistan, Amritsar in India.
It's a town near the border.
Right. Russia, the old East Germany, Haiti, Bali, the Solomon Islands, the Holy Land, and Seoul. So that's just one year. But a few years ago, you were inspired, maybe challenged, by George W. Bush's Axis of Evil. And you
as soon as he said there's an Axis of Evil, my first thought was, well, I want to go there. I mean, it might be a challenge in some ways, but it just sounded like an interesting collection of destinations.
So Iran, Iraq, and North Korea?
North Korea, I've got to say, is the weirdest place I've ever been to.
How'd you get in?
Well, there is a person who he's British. He lives in Beijing in China, and he's got the key to the door. And if you want to go to North Korea, he's the man to speak to, and he'll get you in.
And to what end?
Well, it was just very, very strange. You constantly thought you were on some sort of movie set, and if you walked around behind the building, you'd find that it was propped up and it wasn't really real. It was a very strange place.
And what about Iran and Iraq?
You know, Iraq, it's still a little bit of a war going on there, but although people are going to far more places than they were a year or two ago when I went there. But Iran, you know, is perfectly fine. There's no problems in Iran.
Wait, and Iran is, you know, we're discussing whether or not, whether we should strike it.
Well, again, you know, I hope they don't. You know, the people are incredibly outgoing, and I mean, we see so much of that. I mean, we see movies about Iran all the time. Didn't they win the Oscar for the best foreign film a year or two
yes.
ago? And one of the things about Iran is they still love poetry from the old days and, you know, sitting in gardens and drinking tea and quoting poetry to another. And we all know Omar Khayyam, although he does mention wine, which doesn't come into it these days.
So is there a Lonely Planet guide to the axis of evil?
Oh, yeah, we cover just about everywhere. We've got a separate guide on Iran. We cover Iraq in our Middle East guide.
Cuba?
Oh, Cuba, of course, yes.
Libya?
Libya, it's gone downhill a bit in Libya, but we cover Libya.
Where haven't you gone?
You know, there's so many places I haven't been to, and I think one of the things about travel is you find the more places you go to, the more places you haven't been to. Lots of places in Africa that I'd like to get around to. But Africa, there's so many countries, so you've got a big choice there.
Yeah.
I haven't been to most of the stands. I've been to Afghanistan and Pakistan and Kurdistan and Kazakhstan, but there's more stands, Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan.
What's the strangest thing that ever happened to you traveling?
You know, some of the strangest things that happened to me traveling with kids, they put a whole new perspective on things, and they'll do things that really surprise you. We did a walk in Nepal once with our two kids, who at the time were about 8 and 10, and some friends and their kids. And we had 2 6-year-olds, and the 2 6-year-olds walked for a week. And, you know, if at the start of this you said, you know, you've got 6-year-olds and they're going to walk for a week, you'd have said, no, they couldn't do it.
Well, that brings a question. You know, some of my trying to get away from things has incredibly backfired. I went to Machu Picchu and we were completely alone for about 15 seconds. And then these buses pulled up with these New York accents. And it turned out it was the harmonic convergence. And there was immediately no sense of being away. But then I'm thinking, are you ever frightened? Have you ever gotten yourself so far away and so far away from what you know that you're frightened?
Most of my great fearful moments in travel have been in the back of taxis that you think, oh, why doesn't this taxi driver slow down? I wish I was behind the wheel instead of him. But, you know, I'm very cautious. And despite some of the places I go to, I'm a careful person. And I've never been really scared. No, I've never been in a situation where I thought this is really getting out of hand.
Yeah. Another time in northern Thailand, a friend and I were on an elephant way out, almost on the border with Laos. And there were two elephants, my friend and I and our guide. And he started gesturing madly, get off the elephant, get off the elephant. So we scrambled out off the elephant. Just as the elephant behind us mounted the elephant we had been on, and we would have been dead. But it was extraordinary. It was frightening. But
worth seeing.
Yeah, but that kind of, it's not going to happen at home.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Probably not at the zoo either. They probably, you know, keep them apart when those sort of things.
Well, it was just, I mean, it was quite stunning. But is there something where you've just said, wow, you know?
Oh, look, there are so many moments. But actually, my elephant story is much more mundane than that. We were on two elephants, and we were watching rhinos in the jungle in the south of Nepal. And my wife and I were on one elephant, and as he went under this tree, a branch brushed my wife's cap off. And the elephant coming behind with some more people just nonchalantly reached down, picked up her cap, and handed it back.
Oh.
And it was just done without, you know, a moment's thought. It saw this stupid tourist lose her cap, and I'll hand it back to her.
Can we just say one of the international concerns we have is that the near extinction of elephants. Tony Wheeler, the founder of the Lonely Planet guidebook series with his wife Maureen. He's still traveling all over the world. You can check out his blog at hearnow.org. Tony, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.